Welcome to Shaken and Stirred. It's a James Bond rewatch podcast for diehard 00s and franchise first-timers alike. My name is Evan Atkinson. I'm joined by my wickedly talented co-host, Alex Doherty. Alex, how are you?
Pretty swell.
Yeah.
You know, we had some James Bond references at the Grammys this past weekend. Did you catch?
I didn't watch the Grammys, and I'm really upset about that. Mm. And I came to work, and everyone was talking about the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say I hadn't seen them, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, but that seems like your thing.
Interesting. But what does that mean?
I like music.
You do. That's fair.
And I love an award show.
Famously loves the Reddit.
I don't know if you knew that about me. I'm watching the E! Intro mm-hmm. situation, but I don't have Paramount Plus.
We used YouTube TV. Anyways, Laverne Cox said that her outfit was inspired by Goldfinger.
Ooh.
Pretty cute.
I like that. I feel like since we've been watching the James Bond movies, way more people have been talking about James Bond. I'm sure it's the same as it's always been.
No one's talked about James Bond.
Until
I'm convinced
it became something to me. Or maybe because we know more about the James Bond franchise, we pick up on more references.
Yeah, like my brain would have totally passed over her saying that her dress was like Goldfinger.
Never. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, who's that? Sounds like a candy bar.
Literally.
I'd eat that. Would you?
Yeah. It falls in that same category of 100 grand, and I think that sounds great.
Makes you feel like $1 million, 100 grand. Today, we have survived Y2K.
Hell yeah.
We have entered the 2000s with Die Another Day from 2002. The Twin Towers have recently fallen. I'm assuming the first Spy Kids is kind of in the atmosphere right now.
The show Mist of Avalon airing. Just recently found out about that show today.
I have never heard of that. Okay. So that's a reference. Yeah. And James Phillips was born mm-hmm. on December 5th of that year.
Or 3 years past my brother's birth.
We were, what, 5 when this came out? I still wasn't mm-hmm. cluing into James Bond as a franchise.
I'd hope not.
I think as a 5-year-old boy, I went through a secret agent phase for sure.
Well, yeah, but James Bond that early would absolutely make you a misogynist.
You're right. My 8th birthday was spy themed.
Oh, hell yeah.
No,
is that a fact?
Maybe it was my 9th or 10th birthday. Between my 8th and 10th birthdays, I had a spy themed birthday party.
Hell.
My mom made a cake in the shape of a magnifying glass.
A gun.
We strung up a bunch of strings under my dining table and treated it like a laser maze. And you had to crawl through and there's little bells tied to all the strings, which I realized
that's impressive.
So complicated to pull off.
Yeah.
And my parents did it. So shout out to that. It was my 7th birthday because it was 00/7.
Oh, so it was James Bond. It was.
But I'd never seen James Bond before. I remember my parents watching the movie we haven't seen yet, Never Say Never Again, the off-brand
okay.
one where Sean Connery came back.
Okay.
My dad watched that like weirdly all the time. And that was the only one my mom would watch with him because she thought it was so funny and she'd make fun of it the whole time. She thought she was very brave for making fun of a James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. And now having seen almost all the James Bond movies, that is a pretty basic take to realize that they are easy to make fun of. Roger Moore movies exist.
A piece of my mom dies every time I tell her I'm watching these.
Is she disappointed or is she bummed she can't watch them with you?
No, the first time I told her I was doing this, she was like, why would you want to see that?
Why would you subject yourself to that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you become more misogynistic as a woman?
I always want to slap a bitch now, mm. for sure.
Yeah.
No, but something that's kind of wild is we're going to watch this movie and know that Daniel Craig does it in 4 years. And it's, I don't think, going to feel like it. And I'm almost positive.
The switch from 2002 to 2006 is, in my mind, it feels like what 4 years after the invention of the incandescent light bulb must have felt like. Like before you were like dealing with gas running through the pipes of your house. Mm. It was an explosive nightmare. And then 4 years later, you're like, darkness who? I can read at night whenever I want.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure there's a better example.
You love to read, so it's perfect.
No, it's true. That's why I'm spending my time watching James Bond. But I'm excited to watch Die Another Day. I just realized this. This is my interesting theory,
mm-hmm.
is that the last film of most James Bond actors has the word die or kill in it. Die Another Day, No Time to Die, License to Kill, A View to a Kill.
And then no one before that.
Okay, Honor, Majesty, Secret Service doesn't count.
No.
But what was supposed to be Sean Connery's last, You Only Live Twice.
That's true. A movie,
and then he came back, Diamonds Are Forever. It's either about time or death.
Yeah, definitely. It really makes you... Tomorrow Never Dies could have been his last movie, and I would have been satisfied.
That's true. I think that's interesting. I've also heard a thing of basically the last movie of every James Bond actor is probably their worst, which is...
Oh, no. The last one was one of our worst.
Yes. So this is going to be a tough watch. Mm-hmm. This has to be the one where he surfs on the tidal wave. Because
not see that
there's no more Pierce Brosnan movies left, and I know that Pierce Brosnan surfs on a tidal wave at some point.
I just kind of thought that happened in the first movie. Weren't they in Miami? One of these, they were in Miami, I swear.
I don't know. They were in Hong Kong, the Miami of Southeast Asia.
You know, I think I'm confusing the movie where he crashes that wedding, and I think that was still Roger Moore because he kisses the bride.
That's Timothy Dalton.
You're right. Hey, that's his last movie.
That was Timbo.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch 2002's Die Another Day. Alex, what do you think is going to happen in this one?
2002. Do you think it's too soon to go to the Middle East?
I was going to say, what do you think their attitude on terrorism is on this one? Do you think they're pro or anti?
Well, I think for sure they're going to... It's just, you know, kind of like how much of our politics do we think affected this franchise? Probably pretty heavily because we're...
This must have been filming in 2001.
True,
did they have time to be affected by it?
Okay, no. Instead, we'll deal with... I thought about the zero amount, and I'm just going to start naming off things.
Yes.
We're going to be going to both Brazil and Russia.
Okay.
I think the problem is going to be that the world... it's going to be climate change. The planet's getting too hot, and maybe somebody's getting into hydropower. I don't think we've done that yet.
Okay. That kind of tracks with the tidal wave, though.
Hey, yes, I've told Hawaii then as well.
Oh my God, I think you're fully right. We'll see.
Because we're in a post Al Gore lifestyle.
Post Al Gore, R.I.P.
But like, he has already run for president.
That's true. That is true. Also, my favorite fact about filming movies during 9/11. Do you know the movie? Is it Master of Disguise? With Dana Carvey. Mm-mm. Well, he plays a character named Pistachio Disguisey. And his thing is he can disguise himself a lot. And there's a scene where he dresses up as a turtle man. And he's like at a dinner party. And they had to film that. They filmed that during the planes hitting the building on 9/11. And while he's dressed as a turtle, he had to stop filming and say a prayer for the crew on the set. So as you're watching this turtle scene in a terrible movie, you know in the back of your head that people they were dealing with the fallout of a terror attack.
Damn.
I think Die Another Day is going to be about another... You can't give the title too much credence.
No.
Except for, like, they're
all... I mean, it doesn't tell you anything.
They're all something else. Like, World Is Not Enough, family motto. Like, that was it. That was the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I think Die Another Day, we are going to go to 2002. What are people interested in? What area? Antarctica. Nice. I think we are going, like, because everywhere, we've pretty much been to everywhere, you know?
I mean, I would say.
I think we're going to go to Antarctica. I think we are going to go to America again. I think we are going to...
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I have to correct that Al Gore did not run for president during this point. He has yet to do that. He's currently the vice president of Bill Clinton. I knew I was wrong.
We are in a mid-Al Gore... era. No, it's good because I had nothing. I think this is gonna be like, this is right around the time of the first Fast and Furious movie, so I think we're gonna go to Los Angeles. I think we're gonna have a real different attitude towards CGI, but more than I don't know anything else. We are going to watch Die Another Day, get a little bit more shaken, a little bit more stirred, and come back and tell you all about it. All right,
see ya.
We just watched all 2 hours and 12 minutes of 2002's Die Another Day. Say that 5 times. I know I just did. Boy, howdy, what a movie. This is our farewell to the Irish heartthrob Pierce Brosnan.
And he did a pretty good job.
Yeah. You think this is fitting farewell?
Well, he didn't really get farewell vibes until he faked, almost had sex with Monty Penny.
We'll get to that in a little bit. We've had the highs and the lows, I feel like, in our time with Pierce Brosnan. Tomorrow Never Dies is our highest rating film
yeah.
so far. World Is Not Enough is like our lowest rating that the recording remains for.
Awful film.
And those are back to back. So we had an 8.5. GoldenEye was great. And then it got even better with Tomorrow Never Dies, and then went to the pits with The World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day. You liked it.
I had a great time. I would say, Em and I were talking about this. This movie, I was able to follow from start to finish.
Okay.
And I feel like that's key. Usually they end up, I mean, for the most part, it did start getting a little convoluted towards the end, but not nearly as much as usual.
Okay. I was going to say, what you've been able to follow this, what is the plot of this movie?
So this movie is about,
in your simplest terms,
there's a son in North Korea at the peak of the relations between North and South Korea. He's trying to prove himself to his dad, goes behind his back and starts doing crazy things with some diamonds and kidnaps James Bond. They keep him in jail for a couple years. Then his dad finds out.
Who's him? What?
Oh, sorry. Colonel Moon is the man that puts James Bond into jail.
Okay.
They torture James Bond for a few years. Colonel Moon's dad, General Moon, finds out. He's pissed. M then trades James Bond and gets him back.
Yeah.
Bond escapes. M then fires James Bond. Then James Bond goes on a fun little escapade to try to figure out what Colonel Moon is up to, because he's so pissed about being kidnapped for a few years, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Turns out what Colonel Moon's up to is turning into a white man and moving to England and getting into an intense diamond trade. And actually, that all leads up to, turns out, he wants to create a large sun laser that will then eradicate land so that they can then, North Korea can move their troops in to start a land war into South Korea so they could then be one Korea.
That's basically it. It is. Okay. So here I'm going to do my interpretation of the plot, mm-hmm, by just reading quotes that I've heard either from the movie or from you and our friend M, who watched this with us tonight. Here's the first quote. No, he surfed to the helicopter. Yeah, then he got in the hovercraft. No, this is the invisible car. This is pretty sick. Car in the ice palace. And then this is a quote from the movie. An ice palace can be such a treacherous place. What? What in God's name is happening in this movie?
It's a good one.
So, okay. We open on military surfing. There are three people surfing into North Korea. It's James Bond and two agents who we don't need to learn the names of because they're gone.
We never see them again.
In like the first 15. They could have just had to be James Bond in that scene, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
He.
But one surfer on the wave is not as cool as three.
That's true. Yeah, they had to heighten it.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to North Carolina, to North Korea to investigate a diamond smuggling ring. Turns out it's this North Korean general and his buddy Zhao. And James Bond busts it up, kills the North Korean colonel. Zhao survives, escapes. If we fast forward, that North Korean colonel has transmogrified himself into a white British man and is now a diamond celebrity.
He's
introduced parachuting into the grounds of the British villain. His name is what? Gilbert Grape? That's not it.
Gustav Graves.
Gustav Graves.
I remember the names of these people in this movie. I feel like I never do.
He parachutes into Buckingham Palace with a British flag parachute, gets out. Reporters are there. They're like, when are you going to meet with the Queen? And he's like, I'm about to be knighted. And then they're like, what are you going to do with the children's hospital later? He's like, I'm going to buy it and make healthcare free for kids.
Yep.
And then I'm going to sword fight my way onto my yachting competition.
They already have healthcare like that up.
Oh, that's grim, isn't it? The best thing I could think of is something they already have.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the teeth then, England. But he's the celebrity. It turns out it's this North Korean colonel who has, through DNA, gene therapy?
Yeah.
Transformed
gene therapy,
himself.
I thought was the theme of this movie, and then they just never talked about it again.
So what, because you seem to know what gene therapy was immediately. I have not heard of it outside of this movie.
it was kind of a thing that people were really into, and they still do. Where it's like you're stem able cells. To, you're able to modify your DNA. So people got really into that for like building your own baby concept. That's all just fucking around with DNA.
Okay, so, but they did it through glowing face masks.
Uh-huh. That looks like you're in the Avatar.
Or as Halle Berry described it. Halle Berry's in this movie, by the way. I don't know. He's in some psychedelic light mask. So he has become this British celebrity. And his introduction, I don't know if you got it. The M was like, yeah, he found a huge diamond mine and immediately donated half of it to charity. Is why he's famous.
Wow.
He's just a guy who went to Harvard who found a diamond mine in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out these are conflict diamonds from Africa that he's smuggling and then built a space laser.
Naturally.
It's
named Icarus, because as a man named the moon, he's obsessed with the sun.
Oh my God. That's brilliant.
Listen, this director was trying to do way too much with these symbols in here. One woman died by being stabbed with the Art of War book and a knife.
By Halle Berry, who says, read this, bitch. Which, okay, so.
Like, he's doing too much.
This movie, I wrote in my notes, this movie is, and we're not even at the highlights, lowlights. This is just, this is just general concept. Like, this is the most James Bond, like, Pierce Brosnan movie so far, in my mind. Like, there are lasers.
Mm-hmm.
There are lasers from space. Mm-hmm. There's, like, this is essentially the plot of Diamonds Are Forever. They make a diamond space laser.
Yeah, that is true. And then they just make it a lot fancier with an invisible car.
Oh, my God. There's an invisible car in this movie.
There was a laser fight.
There's a fist fight in a room full of crazy lasers that are there's apparently a button on the wall that makes the lasers just go disco mode.
Yeah, he hits stop and then something else.
Why on earth would you? It looks like a car, like assembly line, like thing with all the Kubota robot arms. But like, thank you. Five of them have lasers on them. It looks like the droid factory in Attack of the Clones. Like, it's just. And he's fighting a man whose name is Mr. Kill. Like, that's why I'm like, this is like a early Roger Moore, late Connery James Bond movie levels of just batshit insanity.
Definitely. And I feel like they were trying to like set the whole, you know, fancy car thing. Like, he much more openly was doing a lot of fucking this film.
Yeah.
Which I feel like they haven't had for a minute.
Pretty gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of tough transition, let's talk about our Bond girls.
Mm-hmm.
We had Rosamund Pike as Miranda Frost, who is Frost because she doesn't want to have sex immediately.
And goes to Iceland pretty quickly.
And goes to Iceland. And she, oh my, and she lives in an ice palace.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's an ice palace in this, in Iceland, that gets melted with a space laser. And our second Bond girl is Halle Berry, who is playing Jacinda.
Jinx.
Jacinda. What's her name?
Johnson, yeah.
Jacinda Johnson, a.k.a. Jinx, because she says she's bad luck.
We meet her as just a lady with a knife going through the water, and then they do immediately have sex. And then she is then shooting a gene therapy guy, and we realize she's a spy.
They don't explain that she is a spy for a lot longer than I think they needed to. They were just, for half the movie, were like, she seems to know what she's doing. But we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And James Bond doesn't know why either. And I feel like it could have been easy for her to just that throwaway scene of her being like, hey, Mr. CIA, yeah, I'm still doing what we talked about. And then I'd be like, oh, cool, great. Well, James Bond doesn't know, but I'm glad I, as the audience, know.
I think they were trying to make it like a reveal because like M was getting that information about the fact that,
there's
or like,
mole.
Well, the CIA was like telling them that they knew all this stuff. That only Jinx would know. And so we knew that, but they weren't being like clear. I feel like it was trying to be like a surprise, but it's not like a fun one or a good one.
Let's talk about
she's American and she's the only American. So you can just kind of assume that she
would. Yeah, that's a good point. There's only ever two Americans in these movies.
The other British person they introduced was MI6.
That's a very good point. Let's talk about the actual thrust for this movie. This is also kind of in the Connery vein of, like, James Bond isn't trying to stop, like, save the world in this one. He's just kind of accidentally doing it.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to just kill this guy.
Yeah.
Zhao.
Who's on a little revenge kick.
Had, during an explosion, got a bunch of diamonds embedded in his face, which was so wild.
Then he tried to turn himself into a white man as well, but they only got halfway through the procedure. So then they just give him really bad blue eye contacts.
James Bond at one point gets offered a massage by a woman named Peaceful Fountains of Desire.
Yeah.
She is a Chinese agent, it turns out.
Are we in the highlights lowlights category?
No, Alex, because I need to talk about the fact that the central thrust of this movie is not James Bond trying to save the world. It is James Bond after being tortured for what we assume is like a year
they
and a half.
They never tell us.
James Bond gets captured in the cold open and then is tortured during the title song for what we later find out is enough time for his hair to go from short cropped at the top of his head to shoulder length with a full Jesus beard.
And for Gustav Graves to become a famous guy. Because he, at the end of that,
that's
is
true.
Not white.
Yeah. For
and then is suddenly a really suave man that everyone's obsessed with.
So James Bond has gone through a world war of psychological terror at this point.
Gave himself a heart attack.
He gets captured by MI6. Basically, some info got leaked out of North Korea, and it's like, that probably came from them successfully torturing James Bond, so we can't trust him.
He threw away his cyanide pills.
It was a double agent. Yeah, why did he do that?
He threw them out years ago.
Them out. From what, his teeth? Wasn't it like a fake tooth or something?
Mm-hmm.
So he is trapped. He's being tortured in North Korea for 2 years. It's fine. It's the same. No effect on him whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. He's got the mental stability of a superhero.
And the mental instability of a superhero in that he can will himself into cardiac arrest by remembering his PTSD so hard his body shuts down.
James Bond, king of compartmentalization.
While he's captured, he forces himself into a heart attack, wakes up from it, fine, uses the EKG machine to knock out two people.
Yeah.
Flirts with the nurse, escapes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about highlights, lowlights.
So, obvious highlight, the Bond girls.
Okay.
I was surprised to see Rosamund Pike as such a, quiet role as Miranda Frost, and then her ending up being a bad guy makes so much more sense to me.
Is that, I've not seen Gone Girl, is that a Gone Girl? Is that Bob Gone Girl?
I guess pretty much, but also just all the movies I've seen her in, she usually has a fair amount of agency.
Mm.
And she's also in Pride and Prejudice. She's in a fair, but I don't know. That was pleasant to see. And then obviously Halle Berry is just amazing. She is actively working while James Bond is fucking Miranda Frost at one point. Mm-hmm. She also had so many quips.
Give me some quips.
When she was getting attacked by lasers, she said, "I'm going to be half the girl I used to be." That's important.
I didn't even catch that. That's great.
What else? God damn. Was that the only one I wrote down?
Highlight for me.
Hmm.
The holodeck fakeouts.
The what?
The hologram fakeouts. There's two separate sequences in this movie that got us both times. At least, yeah.
Well, I thought Monty Penny was fully killed off.
The first
and then
time,
holy fucking.
They hard cut to all of our favorite MI6 agents just dead. And then reveals it's a virtual reality simulation. Second time, it's Moneypenny finally getting her kiss from James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
Which, why did they program that?
Because they knew everybody was wanting it. And it was Pierce's last movie. And it's gross.
Are you telling me that John Cleese programmed something into the spy training thing that was having sex with James Bond?
No, but you can probably make your own reality.
Hey, man. I'm not one.
Penny's a programmer.
Madonna's in this movie.
Well, she does the title song and then shows up as a master swordswoman.
Yeah. Just for one scene when there's a lot of sword fighting in this movie. She shows up as kind of our exposition character into the sword fighting arena. Madonna pops in. She's like, oh, well, that's Gustav Graves. He loves to sword fight. And I also love to sword fight. That's why I'm at the sword fighting place. Anyways, gotta go. My name's Verite, by the way.
Yeah.
Disappears. And we had a big, big fuss about, is that Madonna or not?
Yeah, turns out she's gotten so much plastic surgery done that I've forgotten what she looks like.
Yeah, she used to look like Madonna.
Oh, we didn't. Well, so we were discussing the virtual reality. What are your thoughts on the new Q? Q has obviously died since the last movie.
Yes. Desmond Llewellyn is no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
His hands got the best of him.
Unfortunately, died on the job.
Now we have John Cleese of Monty Python fame as our new Q. I think he's okay. He didn't have much to do in this.
No, but he had little quips. They're fun.
He was great.
And gadgets, another highlight. Great. We had an invisible car.
Invisible car. I wrote that in all caps. That I also wrote later in my notes, this movie looks like a screensaver in the heyday of Scooby-Doo.
Kind of on like ice.
Just like it, the invisible car is made with like Spy Kids level CGI in such a weird like 2002, my MacBook is clear. You know what I'm talking about? Like that era of design of everything has to be clear to be cool.
Yep.
Ice and fire. Oakley's are fashion.
Yeah. Setting of the tone.
The future is now. We tracked the modes of transportation. I think this is a highlight. If they're going all out for it, we had 10 different modes of transportation.
Solid.
The highest we guessed as a group would be 8.
Yeah.
We were all wrong. It was rocket sleds. It was
hovercrafts.
Flying sleds called switchblades. A big old plane. Hovercrafts. The hovercraft chase at the beginning was, I thought, the best part of the movie.
Yeah, that was really good. A car that went really fast.
Invisible car. Hey, I got this right. Surfing a tidal wave.
Yep.
But I didn't realize it would be caused by a sun laser in Iceland.
Yep.
I couldn't have guessed anything that was going to happen in this movie. Also,
Halle Berry dies for a second. He saves her with a car.
Yeah.
Lots of transportation.
Okay, so highlight, I think for me, we talked about this while we were watching it. This movie owes a lot and gives a lot to the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
It like,
I was hoping there was going to be a fair amount of car chases like that just because of that time.
The idea that James Bond has to do so many non-car things in a car is very Fast and Furious. Also, Fast and Furious gets the cargo plane stunt from the 6th one from this. And gets the driving a car out of a plane thing from the 7th one from this.
Yeah. Except instead of driving out a plane, James Bond drives out, or a car out of a plane, he drives out a helicopter.
Oh. Here's a big lowlight for me. And this was in all caps in my notes. Pierce Brosnan walks like a chimpanzee.
In all caps?
I care a lot about it. I didn't clock it further into the movie, but in the beginning, or at least like the first third, he always walks with his chest puffed out, his arms like long by his sides.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like waddles, his knees are kind of pointing in opposite directions. Like, really weird, and I don't know if that's his only actor's choice as trying to show he was tortured for a year and a half. Is like, and I walk funny.
I don't remember him walking like that.
That's hashtag not my James Bond if he always walks like that.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Connery is supremacy always. Hey, I don't know.
What did you think about the dirty talk between Halle Berry and James Bond leading up to the first time they have sex?
I thought it was pretty funny. Pretty fun.
James Bond's like, you're hot. And she's like, who are you? And he says, I'm an ornithologist. Which keeps in the James Bond tradition of picking a really specific zoological job as your cover story.
And he loves to be a researcher.
She goes, oh, there's owl, like the owl's keeping you up at night. And he's like, there's no owls in the Bahamas or Cuba. They're in Cuba at this point. There's no owls in Cuba. And she goes, oh, then what's keeping you up? And he's like, you could be. They have, it was pretty hot, but I would call it graphic steamy intercourse.
Yeah, she at one point pulls out a knife and then you think she's going to cut him with it. But then she pulls out a fig, cuts that fig, eats it, and then gets the juices all over them. And it's, I don't know where she gets both the knife and
I'm imagining she has a compartment in her thigh like RoboCop and the fig and knife like eject out.
Well, they did allude to her being obsessed with knives when she came out of the water with one strapped to her.
And she did throw knives in the finale. Mm-hmm. So Jinx is a knife person. Mm-hmm. The fig, I think they were rolling around in flagrante on top of that fig for a while. I think that is a warm fig she is eating.
Maybe she just gets room service like that.
It's
another low light for me is just kind of towards the later half of the movie. James Bond's not really doing much, I find.
I agree. Tell me more.
Well, the whole bit of like, I feel like the way he breaks into the place, not as places that he's going into, not as fun. He just kind of swims underwater, finds it on accident. Mm. Just feels accidental, like what you were saying.
I think he's starting to move a little bit slower, this is really, Tim Dalton messed me up for what I could expect. And the earlier Pierce Brosnan's, mm-hmm. I guess, because...
Definitely. They try to get dark like that, I think, by like having a laser go through a guy's face, but it just wasn't nearly as shocking as someone going through like a screw.
But it's also a laser. Like, Timothy Dalton...
It was pretty cool.
Timothy Dalton is fighting like the cocaine epidemic. Like, that's real. He's stopping Colombian drug lords. It's, and then they cut films to this guy and he's like, I built a space laser.
Yeah.
Can we talk?
That's about... more James Bond, though.
Did you have a point? I feel like you had a point.
Oh, no. I was just going to go back instead to the speeds ups and slowdowns of this movie.
Is that a low light or highlight or just an observation?
I'm going to give it a low light.
They did, I think it's called speed ramping is the term, but it's when they did this a lot in early 2000s music videos and in the first Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah.
Where they go like, super fast, like camera move to slow.
But they didn't time it right.
It's like choppy.
Someone was like walking. It's like, I don't need that.
They do it a lot in Bollywood movies too. It was like, it was just really weird.
Yeah, it just didn't make, it wasn't like when someone was doing something epic, or if it was, it was like, oh, why did I do that?
It fully looked like there was going to be like some weird like lower third that comes up and they're like Blink 182, you know, playing their cool song off this album.
Mm-hmm.
Very MTV Jump era music video.
Yeah, I could see this.
The villains, Gustav Graves, fine. I don't know why he needed to wear a suit to control the laser.
Well, because he wanted to have a button that electrocutes people, and he wanted to have...
If they try to take it off him.
And then a button that helped him hug his father.
An important button, mm-hmm. to include.
Mm-hmm. Before he killed him.
Zhao, who was played by Johnny Trang from... Fast and Furious, the year before, Mr. Yoon was, I think he was good. He didn't really get a chance to do any of the fighting I expected.
They show him do a couple kicks.
Well, they show him off in the beginning as a really incredible martial artist.
Mm-hmm. And then his
big fight with James Bond is in a car.
Yep.
In a Jaguar with a minigun on the back,
yep.
across a frozen lake.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, it was so much setup of this guy's a martial arts badass for him to be like, and I'm fighting you in a car.
Yeah, I didn't really like how long that went. It kind of felt like a sponsorship.
That went for a long time. The sword fight went for a long time between Graves and Bond.
Mm-hmm. Highlight, I could follow the plot.
That is bananas to me. What did we think of the song intro? Was like it basically showing us James Bond getting tortured for a year and a half.
I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. What about the song?
I didn't like any of it combined. Mm-hmm. I think the song didn't really make sense for anything that was going on screen. I don't think anything going on screen made sense for the song. It's like at any time to have that going, like to have like real video of torture, you're going to choose Madonna's Madonna. Like, why would you not choose one of the like epic like ballads? And then do the weird jumping through hoops and everything turning on fire with the portraits of naked ladies to the Madonna song.
It felt like Pierce Brosnan was like dating Madonna at this time or something. Like, she was good in the movie. Her acting was fine.
I feel like she was acting at the time. I think she might have been in her acting era.
Oh, okay. This was around the time she did that sex movie with Willem Dafoe. Do you know about this? She plays
probably around
she
this
plays
time.
A character who is like weaponizes sex and she like kills people by getting them so horny they die.
Nice.
And then Willem
like Dafoe follows situation.
Exactly. Willem Dafoe is the lawyer defending her because they're like this woman's body is a lethal weapon. And he's like, you have no body of evidence. And they're like, her body is the evidence.
Oh, God.
And then she has sex with Willem Dafoe. And during the filming of that movie, the director had to have a stand-in be in place of Willem Dafoe's penis because he said it was too irrationally large. Willem Dafoe's penis is uncomfortably massive, and he hired a guy with a smaller penis. He is the romantic lead of the movie, and Willem Dafoe's penis is too large.
It was seen?
Well, no, it's not.
But like, there's just full dick in this movie.
Yes. Oh, no. It was
fake Willem Dafoe
this
dick.
This was at like the height of Madonna's star power, I feel like.
Wait, amazing.
Okay.
Well, no, that was the 80s.
We digress. Yeah, I did not like the Madonna song. I was uninterested.
I will have to say a low light is the few times in the beginning they kind of drop this theme towards the end, which I think is strange. But in the beginning, they keep making like references that like the UK is policing the world and like the bad guys are like making fun of them for it. And it's like what drives them. And it's like James Bond feels guilty for a second and then just like fully is on board, which I just think is weird.
Team UK World Police.
Yeah. I'm just like, why are we trying to play themes of that?
Colonel Moon, the guy...
Colonel Moon just wanted to be loved by his father.
And...
Destroyed Japan.
Who he becomes this famous charitable diamond magnate by gene splicing himself to become a white man.
And he just cosplays as James Bond, he says.
He cosplays James Bond, which that actor has done nothing in his career besides this role and voice James Bond in audio plays, which is...
When you find your niche.
Bizarre. His whole career is like voice acting James Bond things.
I mean, epic.
I would love to have that job. But Gustav Graves or, you know, Colonel Moon, whatever, this guy's character, how did he have the team or thought to build a sun laser?
It's been a long few years.
Like, villains normally are like, here's my ultimate plan. I hate people, so I'm sinking the world. And making a big ocean, and I built this undersea thing, and my whole thing's undersea themed. And his thing is like, I love smuggling diamonds. Oh, also, out back is my space laser.
Well, he was like, how do I get roads so clear that I can bring a bunch of troops in?
How do I easily build a road? The answer is to bring the full force of the sun to bear on the earth.
Well, there's a lot of themes playing here. Sun, sun, moon.
Listen, I hear you, but I am shocked. I am also shocked at how it's kind of like in Thunderball when he's like, he had nukes pointed at Washington, D.C. and London. And he's like, yeah,
like $1 million.
Yeah, that'll be $1 million, please. And it's like, no, dude, you can ask for more than that.
No.
He's like, I built an indestructible space laser capable of like glassing any city on the planet, and I'm using it to build roads so we can just use shitty tanks.
Yeah.
Just point it at like the capital and be like, surrender.
This is why his dad was trying to stop him. Saw this
because he obviously didn't read The Art of War close enough, because The Art of War would have been like, you should try to win.
So what was your favorite character?
What is the character that we want to have a spin-off property? I mean, it's been Moneypenny for most of these, because that Samantha Bond is such a good Moneypenny.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to say you should go first.
I mean, mine's going to be obvious. Jane.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, because she's understandably going to go back to the CIA and do her thing, and like there's going to be a great spinoff opportunity there.
I don't know if I watch any more of this guy, but I am curious about the American intelligence leader.
Oh, God. Who,
he was insufferable, but he was like, normally they play the American intelligence guys as like, either Felix is just kind of like Team James Bond or dumb.
But this, never a man in charge, though. This guy was a man in charge.
That's true. But this guy was like, he didn't mess up at all. He was just kind of mean.
Yeah. No, he was mean, but he looked like a mess. Like, he was, like, very disorganized as opposed to M's, like, very stoic.
Very prim and proper.
Mm-hmm. Really? Even though she was still a cold bitch. I loved it.
I'm curious about that guy, because I feel like he's up to no good, mm-hmm. but, like, he's effective at it, which is scarier. Mm-hmm. I want to learn more about him. What is the best Bond moment? What's it, like, you get one entry for this.
One. Okay.
Because we've already talked about a lot.
It's true. Oh, we didn't talk about how cute it was when they were, him and Jinx were breaking into things together. They have Hyde and matching camo together. No. Well. Miss Frost was a triple agent. Okay, you go first.
Okay. I think, oh my God, the most James Bond line, or the most like encapsulating, like almost, it could be a tagline for any James Bond movie, is sex for dinner, death for breakfast. Which Rosamund Pike's character says about James Bond, and that's so real.
She later finishes it with, I guess death is for breakfast. Oh, it really is death
for breakfast. It really is death for breakfast. That was just...
It was pretty beautiful.
Banana rim.
I have to say, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's going to have to go to the lines he was throwing out while James was fully poisoned by scorpions. Mm. And still able to give some quips about the fact that he was injected with scorpions.
Yeah.
Can't remember a single joke he said, but that's going to be it for me.
What would you rate this movie out of 10? We're saying goodbye to Pierce Brosnan.
I'm going to give this one 8.5.
An 8.5?
I had a really good time. I liked the fact that I was able to understand it. I loved everybody in it. It was like some weird premises, but par for the course. But I don't want to give it less than Golden.
Oh, interesting.
That's my problem.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to start running into this quite frequently.
So you're comfortable with an 8?
8.5.
8.5. Okay. I did not like this movie. I only like it a hair more than the last movie we watched. I thought, I'm going to give this a 5 out of 10.
I am shocked.
We've never disagreed this sharply on a movie.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The encapsulation of my feelings towards this movie is when James is driving the rocket sled off the ice cliff and he hooks in like a rope behind him, and there's just, it flops like a limp carrot on the side of the ice wall in like the worst CGI imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom Menace Gungan battle CGI. And I think maybe it's the mood I'm in watching this. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because, like, I thought the trend with these movies was it's getting, and knowing that Daniel Craig is next, of like, I feel like they're getting more realistic. They're getting more modern. Like,
why would you think that?
Because they were.
Not the last movie. Or the one before that. Or the one before that.
This just went, those were at least like an action movie. This was a James Bond movie in a wild, like, Austin Powers-y way.
I can see.
And I like that, but I think it's, I'm sure I will reconsider this if I watch this a second time, and I'll rate it higher. But right now, I'm like, this is just 5 out of 10.
You gave an 8.5 to a movie where the main villain fucked people to death.
What movie is
that? The Russian Woman.
Oh, Xenia on the top. Yeah, because that's Catherine Zeta-Jones is hot. I don't know, man. I'm sticking with my guns. I'm giving this one a 5.
Fair.
Something about it.
Didn't sit well.
We are done with all but one James Bond. We are coming up with Casino Royale 2006, only 4 years later with Daniel Craig.
What if this movie's bad?
What if Casino... I tell you what, we watched Casino Royale for my birthday pretty recently.
I thought I fell asleep.
I watched it all. I loved it. Again, this is the movie where James Bond gets whipped in the balls with a rope on a chair, and he giggles. Moving into the post-Bourne Identity James Bond movies, there's shaky cam, there's grit,
mm-hmm.
there's realism. For the most part, I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled as well.
We're almost there. Y'all, that'll do us for Shaking and Stirred.